Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 8th. I'm Ray Graff. It's physical therapy today. And joining us is Matthew Goodemote. Matthew owns a practice in Saratoga Springs, New York. And he is on the line today to answer your questions about orthopedics and sports medicine. If you have an injured or aching knee or shoulder or elbow or back, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out via email at voxpop@wamc.org. But our number again is 1-800-348-2551. It's physical therapy today. Matthew Goodemote and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matt is the owner of Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga Springs, New York. His 20 years of experience includes exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Matthew is one of just 350 with his diploma from the Mackenzie Spine Institute International. Matthew founded PhysioFit Physical Therapy in Saratoga, Clifton Park, and Albany. It specializes in prevention, continuing PT care after insurance no longer authorizes visits, and progressing patients beyond normal daily activities. If you have an ache or a pain you think physical therapy might be of some assistance to remedy, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back, sir. How have you been?
Good, Ray. How have you been?
You know, hanging in there. Let's talk about shoulders to start the show.
Okay.
Now, what is the most common shoulder ailment that is not sports related? An everyday person might have it.
Well, it depends on age, but assuming it's somebody over 50, then it would be degenerative tendons.
Yeah.
So as we use our shoulder more and more, we start to develop joint degeneration, little bone spurs, things like that, and then the tendons themselves will get frayed a little bit.
And how do you work with that? I mean, old age is old age, right? You always hear old people like myself say, "Oh God, it's just old age. I ache." How do you fix that?
Well, the tendons are incredibly resilient, and they respond very well to exercise. In fact, there's not many things in the musculoskeletal system that does not respond very well to exercise. Joints, nerves, cartilage, all of it. So the solution often is exercise, and then identifying, targeting more specifically what shoulder exercises you may need. For example, some people, they have a weakness or an imbalance of musculature with their shoulder blade, and that causes some movements that are more provocative to the tendons. And so learning how to control the shoulder blade can often give relief to a shoulder. Sometimes directly addressing the tendon itself, like a rotator cuff, there's four different muscles that make up the rotator cuff, and often they need to be addressed. And the final one for the shoulder is actually your thoracic spine. And often people overlook the fact that if your thoracic spine is rounded, meaning slouched, then you're putting your shoulder in a mechanically disadvantaged position, which is likely going to lead to irritation of the joint or of the tendons.
So. Very interesting. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today, and you had mentioned thoracic, you said spine.
Yep.
I see players, pitchers in baseball who are out for the season with thoracic outlet syndrome. What is that?
So the thoracic outlet is actually nerve. So they're having symptoms affected, nerve affecting, and it's throwing off their ability to use their shoulder complex. And so the muscles are supplied by nerves, which the brain will say muscles contract. And when there's an impingement or there's some type of injury to that area, it will lead to a thing called thoracic outlet, which will impair the muscle's ability to function properly.
Well, our number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll get to the calls in a moment here. This email came in a while back from Yvonne, and Yvonne writes, "With bad knees, hips, bunions, and scoliosis, how can I know if the knee replacement I need won't create more problems? Is there a way to get a full body assessment? I'd do anything to avoid surgery. Is this something that a physical therapist might do?" That's a great question.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, it's a more and more common thing in physical therapy because we know trying to isolate something is very difficult and usually ineffective. So bunions tell me that she's walking funny, and it could be because of the knees or it could be because of the hips. So just that alone, when someone comes in with that, I have to assess the entire lower extremity. And then the spine will play its role as well, because if the lower back is involved at all, it's going to influence the hips, which in turn will influence all the way down the chain, we call it, and into the feet. So absolutely, it is more and more common for physical therapists to do that assessment. But I will say it's not every physical therapist that's doing it yet, much to my chagrin.
You know, a lot of people are just getting back into the workflow now and getting out of the house, and it has been a four-month lockdown for many. What is the most common ailment that you are hearing of that really could be worked on at home?
Well, there's two things. One is during the pandemic, or during the lockdown rather, there was a lot of people who started to run. And so we saw an increase in things like shin splints, foot pain, and some knee pain. But with the return to work, it's the typical spine ailments. So a lot of people having upper back and neck issues. We had that just with some people at lockdown because they're spending more time on the computer doing Zoom and whatever. And certainly the lower back is involved with that as well. I wrote an article for the Saratoga Today when the lockdown happened, because all those poor bankers that were working on the payroll protection plan for everyone was sitting like ridiculous amount of hours to try to help people like me get keep my business open. And so the lower back, the upper back and neck are probably the most common things we're seeing here.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Let's get a call in here before the first break. 800-348-2551 is our number if you have a question for Matt. Barbara in Bristol, Vermont. Barbara, you're on.
Hi. Because of the virus, we're all home now trying to do our exercises. I used to go to exercise classes at a fitness center, but not anymore. So I go online, find little videos, or do them myself. But as I'm doing these squats and planks and crunches, over 4 months of time, I kind of question whether, if I'm doing them wrong, am I kind of building some sort of problems in myself?
Yeah.
Do you have any little red flags or tips for doing squats properly, planks properly, crunches properly?
Yeah. So there are still people doing virtual therapy, so you can definitely have somebody actually watch you and not go out and see people. So that's one option. But as far as just the recommendation, my favorite exercise is the squat, and I just have people sit down in a chair and stand up. Because when you sit down, you stick your bottom backwards to meet the chair, and that's how you do a squat properly. So my little slogan, when in doubt, stick your butt out. When it comes to the plank, the most common mistake people make is one of two things. One is they overarch their back, so they let their back sag, and the other one is they stick their butt too high in the air. So a plank should be like a plank of wood. And one of the cues we give in the clinic is, if I took a 2x4 and I placed it on your back, it should touch the back of your head, the upper part, your middle back, thoracic spine, and then your pelvis. And that's kind of a general rule, a good one to follow. And crunches, I would recommend you stop immediately. because this is my McKenzie training. So we know that repeated flexion exercises has an effect on the discs in the back. And so a lot of people in my profession have gone away from doing the crunch because there's much more effective ways to engage your abdominal muscles without the risk of injuring your disc. So if you were looking on something, you would look for something called a dead bug or a dying bug. And it's a way to work your abdominal muscles without doing the crunch movement.
Okay. So dead bug then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dead or dying bug. Yep.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Barbara. We appreciate the call. But to be clear, Matthew, it's not unanimous prohibition against crunches, right? Some people say, do your crunches, man. Do your crunches.
Yeah. It's pretty unanimous, Ray. There's not a lot of people, and partly because there's way more effective ways to address your abdominal muscles. So, you know, if it were me and someone had been doing them for years and having no complications, then no, I wouldn't say you have to stop them. But to start it up, or when I'm asked the question, you know, what would I recommend for technique? Well, I'd recommend stop doing those.
Okay,
fair. More effective.
Hey, let's take a break here. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's Physical Therapy Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemode is here today. We talk physical therapy, and we have an email here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Patrick in North Adams. Patrick says, can PT help for cubital tunnel impingement? I've had a nerve conduction test done and was told I had two choices, one, surgery, two, live with it. That's from Patrick in North Adams.
So this is a similar thing as like carpal tunnel, but cubitals in the foot.
Okay.
So, and yes, physical therapy is definitely worth trying. In the clinic, I would do a whole bunch of manual techniques, including joint mobilizations and soft tissue work and things, to see if you can have any effect on releasing the tension around the nerve. And then there's other things you can do too, which is checking into the type of shoes you're wearing, working on different exercises for the foot. All that being said, there are times where it won't work and you are left with the choice of dealing with the pain or having surgery. But I'm a huge advocate of trying everything first kind of thing, and to make sure that you have explored specifically the manual techniques and then some exercises, because like the carpal tunnel, if you catch things in an appropriate time frame, you can absolutely have an impact. And the final thing I'll say about it is there's a reason that it happened. And so trying to identify, was it the type of shoes? Was it the style of gait? Things like that. And you can alter those. And that can sometimes help to provide the right environment for a solution to be available.
Matthew Goodemode is our guest. It's physical therapy today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Will is in Brooklyn. Hello, Will in Brooklyn.
Hi. I have two questions, very different in nature. The first is, I've always been amazed since the start of the New York Exchange, and maybe before for insurance policies, that physical therapy coverage has only been allowed if it's following surgery or hospitalization. So I'm wondering how that came about. And, I mean, obviously it would be tremendously beneficial to prevent surgery or hospitalization.
Yes.
And what body is involved, like how that can be changed.
Oh, boy. Now, don't swear, Matt, all right? I know this will get you upset, but go ahead.
So there's a couple of things. You can definitely do physical therapy without having had surgery or even a doctor's referral in New York State. We have a thing called direct access, and most insurances go along with it. In fact, I don't know of any that don't anymore. So in New York State, we have the ability to see patients right off the street if you just have some back pain, whatever the condition may be. And part of the reason why I started the cash practice was to do the prevention. Now, as a physical therapist, we are huge advocates of it. I personally have been doing this for over 20 years, and the people that have come to, we call it prehab, before surgery, I've seen much better outcomes. Number one, preparing the person for what's about to happen is incredibly valuable, giving them some instructions about how to handle swelling, things like that. But then specifically the exercises to make sure that you're setting yourself up for success. So fortunately, the insurances are allowing it. And if there is a plan or two out there that doesn't, that would be more on the rare side now.
All right. Well, you have another question, Will?
Yeah. I mean, every plan that I have looked at is, I mean, I know about direct access, but then you go and pay, that the plans on the exchange don't cover it.
Huh.
But the second question is whether you have any tips for people who have, have had injuries, know what to do, but have discipline problems for doing their physical therapy exercises at home.
Yeah,
we have electric shock collars that we hand out.
Electric shock collars? No,
oh,
you
good.
Do
Where
not,
can I get
sir.
That?
No.
So one of the things that one of my very first mentors taught me was that oftentimes the reason for lack of compliance is not understanding the effectiveness of something. So using back pain as an example, I'll often send people home with a single movement or perhaps two to ensure that kind of compliance, because it has an effect on the back pain and it has a direct effect. People tend to be more responsive that way. But it's a common thing that we struggle with as clinicians to have that. And honestly, at this stage of the game for me, I'm more receptive to people where they're at and trying to just make sure that by checking in on them through email or setting up, I have several patients that come in just occasionally, like every 6 weeks. And I'm even now with the virtual therapy doing that, where I check in with people and check their compliance to see how they're doing with their exercises. So.
Oh, Will, thanks a lot for that one. We appreciate it. Over to Martin in Red Hook. Martin.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. So my situation is this. I've got a ruptured tendon in my shoulder. So my bicep dropped, so I have a pump my bicep going on. They won't do surgery because I'm 55. It may take, it may not take. My question is physical, will physical therapy help me now? I mean, it's healed up, so it's like, you know, the pain is gone. Once it ruptured, most of the pain in my shoulder left. And when the bruising left, I just get, you know, occasionally when I stretch out or grab something, I'll get a Charlie horse, like in my bicep. But other than that, it really doesn't seem to have any effect on me.
So there's a couple things. Number one, it is very common for people to not have surgery, especially after the age of 50. And it is one of those things. The bicep has two different tendons, and so one of the tendons tore, but you still have one intact. And another thing is that a lot of people don't know this, but underneath the bicep, there's a muscle called the brachialis, and that's an incredibly strong muscle that does most of the work anyways. So the bicep has significant function for sure, and you will lose, like if you compare it right to left, you will lose some of it, but not much. Like I have some people that maybe 5% difference, so it's not noticeable day to day, but with real heavy lifting it would be. And again, I would, as a physical therapist, highly recommend you do some exercises. Number one, to keep the other tendons in the shoulder strong and healthy, to make sure that you have a regular program, something you're doing maybe on a weekly basis to keep your rotator cuff strong. And then the bicep itself would be just to do full range of motion and ensure that as it heals, you develop scar tissue. So just to make sure the scar tissue doesn't inhibit you in any way. And sometimes that's as simple as just basic range of motion and learning. The bicep movement is a little complex because the bicep actually does three different things. It moves your shoulder, it moves your elbow, and it moves your forearm. So you have to incorporate a movement that does all three of those things simultaneously.
Okay, and what about just if I want to work out with my free weights, because I haven't since this has happened. Will I have an issue doing any kind of curls or any lifting of weights?
Right. Again, because the brachialis is a big one for the bicep curl, ironically, it's not the brachialis curl, but the bicep, what you're more vulnerable is actually at the shoulder because that's where the tendon ruptured at the shoulder. It's still intact down by the elbow, I'm assuming, because you said shoulder. So, which case, no, it's the kind of thing though, like if you haven't worked out, I wouldn't jump into the same weight you had prior to the injury, but it would be something starting off with a weight that's manageable and then week to week increasing it slightly until you get back up to your normal levels.
Martin.
So don't just dive in head first. Take the time, a few weeks to months to get it back to normal.
Well, Martin, thanks for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today on Vox Pop. It's physical therapy, and Diane is in Schenectady. Hello, Diane.
Hi there. I have a question about posture correction. I have, actually, it's for my mother who is older. She's in her late 70s. She is very active. But her shoulders are starting to slump, and we've tried the backpack type posture correctors where, you know, you put your arms in, but she can't get it on and off without help. Do you have any recommendations for something that she could get that she can put on and off by herself and that would kind of help her hold those shoulders back?
Sorry, but I'm not a big fan of those things. So a lot of times, Ray's getting used to me not being a fan of things.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's the truth.
But the reason is because it's not a normal posture to have something holding you up. And what will happen is the muscles that you use to hold you up, they won't be in use because you have this apparatus holding you up. And so because they're not incredibly strong, it's not likely that it would be tremendously negative, but a better solution would be to, number one, identify if she's able to physically get into the posture, number one. And then number two is to set something like I have people doing what I call an overhead stretch. And basically what you do is you literally just reach your arms up over your head, look at your hands as they're overhead, and then bring your hands back down to your side, and then just real slightly bring your head back to straight. And that's a way to reset your posture. And then I recommend people do that every time they go to the restroom, because that means at least five times a day, she's going to reset her posture. And it's partly habit and it's partly activity. So there's things that she's doing in the course of the day that are facilitating that posture. It could be something like preparing a meal, working on a computer, etc. So then you would identify those things and add that stretch using an alarm or something to remind her to do it. where it's an active movement and it becomes habitual when you add it to something that you do regular throughout the day.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Diane. Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote. Physical therapy is the topic, and the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Tess is in Goshen. Tess, you're up.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Let me pull over here. Yes, I fell about 10 days ago, and the way I fell, I flew through the air like Superwoman, but landed on my right shoulder, and it seemed to pop it right out.
Ouch.
Yeah, I got it back in, but so I've put a sling on. I was a little hesitant to go to the doctor. My poor doctor is in the hospital with COVID, so I just wondered, can I just go directly and get an X-ray or MRI and then physical therapy? I'm fairly in good shape and think I could get myself hopefully back in order.
Yeah, most places like urgent care centers would provide the X-ray. MRIs are a little bit trickier. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't, depending on the nature of the injury. The sling, although a great idea for the first couple days, just be sure not to wear it all the time. So it'd be important to take the arm out, and if it's painful or difficult to lift it, then, for example, if you're sitting in a chair, you can use pillows to prop it in different positions where you're not actively using your muscles per se, but you're keeping it out of that sling position. Again, it's fine to use, but don't use it 24/7.
Why?
Your arm will get more and more stiff. The joint will get more and more stiff, and passive movement is 99.99% safe. Okay. It's very rare for passive movements to be dangerous ever. So just changing the joint position, number one, the joint will appreciate it. But number two, it just ensures that it doesn't get stuck or stiff in that particular position, because then when she starts to move it, the less she does leading up to it, the more difficult the initial days will be. And then
instinctively, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And then having somebody look at it, if you have a difficulty lifting the arm, period, then a physical therapist or even an orthopedic should take a look at it, because if the joint truly went out of socket, then you had to have injured something, meaning you've injured the joint capsule itself, or you've injured the tendons and tore a rotator cuff muscle. And it's even possible that you fractured something. There's a little rim on the shoulder blade that makes up part of the socket, and some people will have fractures there as well. So at 10 days, if it's still quite painful, you really do need to get it looked at sooner than later. And not to panic you, but more just because there are definitely things you can do to help the process, and so it's not a, you know, immobilized shoulder.
Yes, and that's why I felt as though turning on the radio, you're a godsend today. I needed to hear that. I'll take care of it, and thank you.
Thanks,
you're
Tess.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Jill is in Schenectady. Jill.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi. Good.
I am calling because I had spinal surgery on C2-5.
Wow.
2 years ago, and I have a plate in my neck, but my right arm function progressed a little bit, but which my surgeon was actually surprised at, but not as much as I'd like. So I'm kind of wondering if there's anything I can do to progress that.
Yeah, so anytime you have function, so even if it's mild, this is just my belief. I wouldn't say this is how everyone feels, but if you have some function in it, then you can improve that function. And so there's things, again, just like I was saying with the last caller, that doing passive range of motion can be helpful, just to make sure the joint of the shoulder, the elbow, the hand is able to move. And then if you're getting muscle contractions still, then doing basic exercises like isometrics, and then from there you build up and you do more and more strengthening exercises with every position that you're able to do. And sometimes it's as simple as just taking a slide, like a furniture slider, and sliding it up and down a wall. And something that, which seems very minor, makes a lot of muscles in the shoulders work. and elbow and hand and everything. So I often have people, and there's people who've had strokes and things like that that will come in for different reasons orthopedically, because I'm not a neurological guy, but they'll come in and I'll have them do similar movements because the arm is functioning and they want it to function more. And so again, if you have some connections there, as far as I know, they can still be built on. And we have a thing, there's lots of things that are popping in my brain right now of things I would have you do, and, you know, using your hands with putty and digging in to get a big bowl of rice and put some marbles in it and try to find the marbles to make your fingers work differently, those kind of things. So there's quite a few things that you could do for sure.
Okay. I will look into that. But I will say that my EMG nerve conduction studies, the doctor that did them was shocked.
Yeah.
That I had not complained of symptoms. He was like, I just can't believe you haven't complained of symptoms before this, but I just kind of sucked it up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, because below the surgery, you know, the C6, C7 area, those are big nerve areas for specific muscles in the shoulder and hands. So you should be able to still use your arm using those nerves. And the ones above it, they tend to have more connection closer to the head and neck. So based on that, I would say you should be able to get some function. And as you said, if you can do some movements, then by all means, keep working on it and try to get as much as out of it as you can.
Jill, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. One more before the next break. Kitty in Rosendale. Hello, Kitty.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was recently diagnosed with primary lateral sclerosis. My balance is really bad, and I'm walking with a cane now. And because of COVID, I really don't want to pursue physical therapy until things have improved some. So are there some things I could be doing on my own at this point?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. Just as a note, like at my clinic, and I don't know around you, but the PTs, we're normally trained in dealing with these type of things because we have people come in with immune compromised situations. So we have an incredibly clean facility, and I'm guessing most PTs do as well. And we've also changed our schedule around, so we're just one-on-one, and we've done the social distancing and all. Mm-hmm. And then there's still virtual therapy. So there's things that you can do, and most right now insurances are still paying for virtual therapy, which would be the best bet if you're not interested in going to an in-person session. And the reason I say that is because you do need to have somebody watch you move in order to recommend specific activities to do, because it will be dependent on what you're capable of doing. Like I wouldn't want to give you one thing that's simple is a chair squat. So just sit down and stand up. But that's more just a strengthening thing, and it doesn't really specifically address balance. But I wouldn't want to give you a suggestion for balance without seeing what your balance looks like. So.
Okay, so you're suggesting that maybe I can look into a virtual therapy?
Definitely.
Virtual.
And
that would be something that I could my insurance would cover.
Well, that's a good
question.
As
of right now, the insurances are still paying for virtual therapy, correct?
All right, Kitty, thanks a lot and good luck. We have to take a break. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy on Vox Pop today. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. You got a question about an ache or a pain, your knee, your back, your shoulder, whatever. Give us a call. Matthew Goodemote is here for about another 20 minutes. A couple emails here, Matt, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Mary. What is your opinion of neuromuscular treatment? Pressure points. I have no idea what that is. Tell us what it is and then what you think about it.
Well, neuromuscular is just the neuromuscular system is how the nerves connect to your muscle. And we do all kinds of neuromuscular exercises that range from balance and coordination to proprioceptive training. Pressure point therapy is a bit more vague. There's things in physical therapy called trigger point releases where you do specific points of pressure. And I have a friend of mine who taught me how to do some acupressure, which is similar where you're pressing on certain areas like an acupuncturist would.
Yeah.
And the idea is that the muscle, if there's an area of tension and you apply a pressure, a firm but not aggressive a pressure, and you hold it, the muscle will actually relax around it. And that's creating a change in how the brain is interpreting things. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's causing, indirectly, what's causing the muscle to let go and relax. That's what we term it.
Okay. Yep. This one is from Rob in Western Massachusetts, and then we'll do one more after that, and then we'll get to the phones. Rob says, here's the history as fuel for the email. I've had 5 knee surgeries, including 1 ACL repair on each. I prehab for each surgery. I'm healthy, very active, relatively pain-free, 49 years old. My question, how do we convince older people, my parents, for example, or anybody that have some aches and pains to try physical therapy first before going to the doctor and asking for x-rays, CT scans, etc.? Seems to me there's a great opportunity available to both save money and make some. Senior centers, YMCA, public schools, after hours, etc. That's from Rob in Western Mass.
So there is a big movement in physical therapy right now, and part of it is that we actually have research studies from the military that show when people go through physical therapy first with musculoskeletal problems, it actually reduces the cost to the medical system. And the problem, unfortunately, is we don't have a big political action committee to make any difference yeah. in Washington. But to convince older people, it is one of the things, what he mentioned is all the things we do at my office. We go to senior centers and do talks. We do things with the Silver Sneakers group at the YMCA. And so basically physical therapists go out into the community and talk. Yeah. And that's one way to convince people to do it. But I'm open to suggestions because it's definitely something we're looking to see ourselves.
Maybe you need a lobbyist, man. Maybe you're going to do that. Thank you very much. All right. Yeah. Let's see. This last email here is from Lori in Kingston. And Lori says, hello, and thanks for having Matthew back on. I did the dead bugs for about 15 years. After an MRI recently showed degenerative disc disease and osteoarthritis in my lower back, my new physical therapist did not add dead bugs to my program. She never really explained why. Are these harmful for me with my current condition? And that's from Lori.
No, so degeneration of the lumbar spine is normal, especially if you're over 30. So I think it's one of those cases, it goes back to the previous email, where we go to x-rays, MRIs, and things to diagnose people. And the diagnosis should come from talking to the person, and then the testing should be to confirm or deny the clinical presentation.
Yep.
So degenerative disc disease is a normal part of getting older. It happens to everybody. And so it's one of those things that, no, the dead bug is actually developed by a PT named Shirley Sharman, who's a famous PT in my world. And it was basically because it has such a low impact on the spine, and it's to engage your, quote, core muscles without directly affecting the spine in a negative way. So, but there are things like I change myself and what I recommend to people, and it's based on the individual. So if she's been doing it for 15 years, it could be she's a superstar at it. So I want to teach her some new things that could be added to her program. And I do a lot of things in standing now, like a thing called weighted carries, where I'll give somebody a weight and they literally just walk holding on to it. They call them suitcase carries or farmer's carries, and they do them in the gym too. I used to do them when I grew up on a farm, so I used to carry pails of milk. And
sure.
And that really works your abdominal muscles and your core muscles. And
right.
by walking, you're working your, you know, glutes as well. So there's just a whole bunch of ways we've learned to address the core now. And dead bugs is one of mine because it's a simple starting point, but I use it really as a starting point, and then I get more advanced depending on the individual.
You know, I've seen a lot of dead bugs, and exercises have never come to mind. I mean, what is this exercise?
So you basically, you're lying on your back, and you bring, so starting out is you engage the core. So you gently press or tighten up your abdominal muscles, and then you bring your right knee up and then bring it back down, and then your left knee up and bring it back down. That's the starting point. And then you have your hands pointing towards the ceiling. And as your right knee comes up, your left arm reaches overhead. And then you alternate back and forth like that. The most advanced version of it is you have your hands and feet in the air, and you keep your abdominal braced so you don't get any movement. So when they use the expression core stabilization, it means that you're stable. And the most common mistake people make is they let their pelvis move as they're doing these activities, and the core is supposed to stabilize the spine and pelvis area while you move your arms and legs.
I gotcha.
So the dead bug is, or dying bug is, when it's moving, it's it's dying. So I don't, and it's on its back. I guess bugs die on their back, Ray. So
well, it's all very violent. Let's go back to the phones. Renee in Catskill. Renee, you're on.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
So about 6 weeks ago, I went running and came back with excruciating pain, no fall, no nothing. I waited for it to pass. It did get a little better, but then I tried to do just some walking, and the pain was unbearable. Went to the doctor, suspected a torn meniscus, did the x-ray, and of course the x-ray doesn't show a torn meniscus, so then I did an MRI, and it was confirmed. So I'm not ready to do surgery, but I will be starting PT. So I would like to know if I can do swimming. Steps are really hard on me, I find. It's painful. So what do you recommend? Can I swim? Yeah,
swimming is definitely okay. So swimming, when you're in the water, the buoyancy opens up the knee joint. It doesn't mean every stroke will be comfortable. So you just would find the ones that are comfortable and do those until you talk to your PT. The good news is that we've learned that a lot of times with meniscal tears, they will get better with therapy. The one thing I'm a huge fan of is getting rid of swelling in the knee. So I would advocate elevating. And people, because they don't see swelling, they don't think they have swelling. And one simple way to find out is just bend your knee. And if you can't bend your knee so your heel touches your butt, then there's likely some swelling in the joint itself. So working on that, getting rid of the swelling and getting your motion back are the starting points with the meniscus. And then it's strength. And the strength will depend on where you need strength. And with the knee, just understand that with a meniscal tear and with the pain you described, I can almost guarantee you that the thigh muscle is weaker on that side now. It's a temporary thing, but it's the way our body works to try to protect us. So it makes things like stairs more difficult, and specifically going downstairs. So with an injury to the knee, you absolutely need to be holding on to something, because the knee can and will give way, especially with a meniscus tear. So you don't want to obviously fall down the stairs. So that's the one area where I'm particularly cautious. And it's not that you shouldn't do stairs. It's just hold on to something just in case.
Should I do alternate, or should I go down with one foot?
Question, because it depends. If you're able to do an alternated reciprocal pattern, it's fine to do. But if you're doing it and you have a major limp, or you're really favoring it to do it, then no, I wouldn't do that. Okay. And then the general rule with that is you go up with your good leg and you lead going down with the bad leg. And the reason for that is that your good leg actually does all the work going up or down that way. So it's up with the down with the bad. Good, go to heaven.
Okay. One more question. Is walking, just simple walking, good? Okay.
Yeah, it's a trick question again, because it depends. If you're limping, no. Bicycling is
fine. I'm not limping.
If you're not limping, then yeah, it's fine.
All right, Renee,
I wouldn't go for like a 5 mile walk or anything. Keep it short so you don't re-injure it.
All right, let's go to Bob in South Windsor, Connecticut. Bob, you're up.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 2 years out from a left total knee replacement, and over that time, I've had chronic issues with popping, snapping, and the pain on the left-hand side of the knee right up to my hip. I went to my orthopedic surgeon today. He keeps saying that I need more PT. It's the iliotibial band. Mm-hmm. Despite being a cyclist and hiking and walking, this pain persists and the popping persists. Is he on the right track, or should I be looking somewhere else?
Nope, it is. It's a snapping tendon like that is often the IT band that's causing it. This is a little bit tricky area, though, because often what I do with that is I want to make sure the patient's someone as active as you describe yourself to be. I would have you foam rolling the thigh, the front of the thigh, the outer part of the thigh, the back of the thigh daily to get the tissue as mobile as you can. And specifically before you do those activities you mentioned, like hiking and biking. And then I would have you working the bejesus out of your hip muscles to get them to be really strong.
Yeah.
And as a cyclist, you're over.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. He did say that my quad is underdeveloped still.
Your quad is
two years and
yeah.
So I guess physical therapy, so PT would be the place to start, right?
Definitely. And to find that out. So just because of the size doesn't mean it's necessarily well, it is going to be weaker because the bigger the muscle, the weaker it is. But if you're doing hiking okay. and cycling, then I'm going to stick with the glutes because the glutes are ultimately most commonly the source of the IT band. Hmm. It is true, though, and you could be the exception because you had a problem before that led to the knee replacement. So I can't rule that out, and I certainly can't see it over the phone, but I wouldn't neglect the glutes.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much. Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote, and Carolyn in Poughkeepsie is next. Carolyn.
Oh, hi. I know you had a question related to this earlier. It's a lumbar. Let me switch phones.
Okay.
It's a lumbar question. L3, L4, L5, and it's progressed to the point where this person feels like their back gives out on them. Now, she had cerebral palsy, but she's walked for years and worked and done heavy lifting and stuff, but now it's given on her. And she's looking at spinal fusion, and I'm saying physical therapy. I have heard that the spinal disc can regenerate or can be healed by certain kinds of exercises, and I'm encouraging her to look that route. Can you give us any feedback on any of those options?
Yeah, so first things, degeneration, as far as I know, there's no exercise or things that can change degeneration. But again, I'm not a big believer that that's the cause of maybe most of the problems. I think it contributes, but not the direct source. So the disc, when it herniates or bulges, that absolutely will regenerate back. And I've seen MRI evidence of it personally, so I'm positive it does happen. The key with things is to identify, number one, you said the L3, L4, and that will...
She says L5, I'm guessing there might be another one involved, but I don't know all the details, so I'm going with her to see a surgeon. Yeah.
This is very important because if the thigh, the front of the thigh is the part that's where she's weak and giving way, then that's
the
L3, L4. And if it's not that area, despite the fact that an X-ray or MRI would show it, it's not the culprit. So the L5,
S1. You said the front of something.
The thigh, I think Matthew
said.
Yeah,
the front of the thigh is the L3, L4 nerve. This is what's important because if she has a problem at L5, S1, that typically is going to affect the foot. So she's having her symptoms in the front of the thigh. That is not
It's her back that's going out on her, and she has sciatica.
It's her back and sciatica. Okay.
Yep. So sciatica is the L5-S1. The thigh, the front of the thigh, is not. So it's important just to know that you have two areas here, that a thigh and a foot. And most times the nerves higher up, L2, L3, L3, L4, they supply the thigh. And it's often the thing that's giving way with things like stairs and such. If it's below
her back's not giving out. Her leg's not giving out. It's her back.
So the back won't give out from the nerves, though. So that's the part. Like, it can give out from pain. So it can give out from pain. So she's having a sharp pain. People will have the sensation like it's giving out. But because the back, the nerves travel down into the foot. So when it's going to be something that's affected by a disc, it's going to affect the muscles in the leg, not in the spine area.
Interesting.
There's a percentage where it could, but it's going to be more on the lower side. And in my experience, in 20 plus years of doing spine, maybe one out of thousands has been that case. So it'd be very, very unusual for that to be the case.
So it's possible.
It is.
So just say exactly what you said again briefly. What is it to look out for?
Just to make sure that with the MRI, it's matching where her symptoms are. So if she has sciatica with symptoms into her foot, that will be the lower lumbar, L4, L5, L5S1. If she's having symptoms in the front of her thigh, that is not those nerve roots. That's different nerve roots. That's going to be L2, L3, L3, L4.
Okay.
And it's very important because if he does a fusion on L5S1 and her main problem is in the thigh, it's the wrong area and vice versa.
Okay.
So that's why it's so important to know where the symptoms are and also to know what is the dominant symptom, because that's usually the one that is the dominant problem. And absolutely would recommend doing therapy, if nothing else, to just clarify which one's which.
Okay.
And a lot of times you can do therapy to improve it anyway, so you can avoid the surgery altogether.
All right. Thank you, Carolyn. And now let's go. Now, we only have 2 minutes left here, Matthew. So when you hear Count Basie tickle the ivories, the show's almost over. Now we'll go to a different Carolyn, this one in Great Barrington. You're on.
Oh, hello. Do you have any tips in getting rid of a very persistent patellar femoral syndrome
I've been told to strengthen the hips, but do you have any other?
I'm sorry, what is that
advice?
First? Let's quickly.
Your patellofemoral is your knee. So the patellofemoral joint is the kneecap area. And it is important to strengthen the thigh muscles for sure. I absolutely believe in the tissue mobility, though, so I would do manual techniques and also do some foam rolling. And I wouldn't overlook strengthening the calf, too, just to have a whole complex, the thigh, the hip, and the lower part of the leg. So with that symptom, I do the whole leg. I don't just do the thigh, for example. I would do hips, thighs, calf.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Splendid.
You're welcome.
All right. 1 minute to go. Brian in Saratoga, you got to pose this question very quickly.
It's Brianne.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Actually, no problem. I broke my ring finger, and I'm getting surgery tomorrow. They have to put a pin in. It's the proximal bone. Rehab time afterwards. What am I expecting?
It depends on the surgeon and what they have to do with the surgery. So the longer you're immobilized, the longer the rehab afterwards can potentially be. So to restore movement, the sooner we get after things, the quicker effect we can have on them. And then it's the whole hand. So the hand, it would be advisable to find a hand therapist because they deal with this every day. And someone like myself, I did a clinical a long time ago, and I know enough to not hurt you, but you want somebody that would really do well and make sure you get full recovery.
All right, great.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's very comforting to know you know enough not to hurt me.
Depends on the patient, Ray.
That's a good way to end the show. Hey, Matthew Goodemo, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, Ray.
And we'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Paul Smith's College, Adirondack Watershed Institute, operating a network of boat wash stations to clean, drain, and dry motorboats, car top boats, and paddle boards, adkcleanboats.org. At Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep our communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Well, once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemo for being here today. Thank you for a tremendous number of great calls and some emails as well. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. James Farrison took the calls today. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, you know, it's always good timing. Tomorrow, Jason Goff is here to talk about the weather. We have some rough weather rolling through right now. I believe there is a severe thunderstorm warning for Warren County up until 3:30. And perhaps Washington County as well. So basically, we'll talk about all the things that are about to happen. That'll be tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.